KING-TV, Seattle, 11:30.
The following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
From Hollywood, The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson. This is Ed McMahon along with Doc Severinsen and the NBC Orchestra inviting you to join Johnny and his guests, Jack Benny, Harry Chapin, Johnny Brown, Claudia Jennings, and the mighty Carson Art Players. And now, here's Johnny.
In the words of Patrick Henry, my audience, drunk or sober, my audience.
Wow.
What?
This garb tonight, that's a newie.
It's a suit.
Yeah. I know it's a suit. I got the horse right here. His name is Paul Revere. And there's the guy who says...
What is that?
You look like you're right out of Guys and Dolls, the opening act.
This is not one of those Mickey Mouse suits.
It's just bold, and it's there. You're very much aware of that suit.
You look like a doorman at Forest Lawn. See, my cruel streak comes out when you do things like that. We have a fine show tonight. I think this should be very interesting because Jack Benny is with us tonight, and we're going to do something kind of... I've known Jack for about 22 years, and he has never changed. He was out in the parking lot just before the show renting autographs. Heard of a grown man renting autographs? And Jack and Mary have been married. It's over 40 years. Fred, how many years is it?
I think it's 42.
Oh, 42 years. Do you believe that? That is amazing, really. And they got married because they have, you know, a lot in common. They have the same hobbies. They have the same sense of humor, the same walk. What? Well, good.
Yes.
Good. Well, he'll be here anyway. Hello, Doctor.
Hey, Chief. You know, Ed was right about the suit. Went that far out.
From him.
You look like one of Robin Hood's men he didn't talk about. What we're talking about.
Well, this shirt is adorned with fighting cocks, though, nevertheless. Yes.
You're not going to drag me down with you. Moving along. Something kind of sweet happened to me. Excuse me, before the show tonight.
What was it?
Nice elderly man came up to me in the parking lot and gave me a little kiss on the cheek. You know, I said, is that for luck? And he says, no, it's a tradition we have in Sicily. You know what that means? You're good tonight. Last night we had... We had kind of a rough audience, the monologue. A guy stood up and yelled, down in front, and he was yelling at me. We have a lady here who has moon madness.
Could you explain that to us?
A banana lady in the front row here going, walk off. Will you hear this one if you think that's good? Today, Melvin Laird resigned as Secretary of Defense. Did you know that? And he recommended... he recommended Governor Rockefeller to replace him. And I want to tell you, anybody who has been governing New York has to be an expert on warfare. Rocky wouldn't be bad. His first official act is going to de-escalate Manhattan, I understand. Sorry, it's that old Japanese bullet in there.
The one you got the Purple Heart for?
That's right, the one I got on when I ran on Guam while you people were back here warming your, you know, bunks. I was over there. That's where I was. Did you hear the news? The Nobel Prize for fiction today was won by Jack Anderson. I'll tell you, that wasn't fair to Tom Eagleton, and Jack Anderson apologized today and retracted the entire story, which is about as effective as the Japanese apologizing December the 8th, wouldn't you say? Big help. Jack Anderson has a great source, though, Clifford Irving. What can he do to me? What can he do to me? We'll see. You know, something like this has happened before in American history. Did you know that? Most people don't know this. In 1844, vice presidential candidate Silas Wright was dropped from the ticket of James K. Polk because they found out he was a notoriously bad dancer. Somebody told you that on the way in, didn't they? You knew that. There was a you want to sit with this lady over here, sir? Now, hijackings normally are not too funny, but there was a weird hijacking today. Did you hear about this one?
Yeah.
The fellow did not ask for money. He asked for a wetsuit, a bottle of Wesson oil, and six stewardesses. I don't understand. That's a weird hijacking. That's a weird one. I read an interesting item in the paper today.
Could you tell us about it?
No. Yes, I will. They are finding new medical uses for marijuana. Did you know that? That's true. My doctor I have out here in Hollywood is just an example. Before a patient comes in, he smokes some to relax. It's a medical use. It's not true. I made that up about my doctor. Okay. There was one of these small little items in the paper today. Very small. But
tell us anyway.
I'm going to. That they use, you know, for filler items. In Hong Kong yesterday, it was true, a well-preserved body of a 2,000-year-old woman was unearthed. And she asked for you.
I've always been a favorite of Oriental.
Yeah. Along with Mr. Jack Benny tonight, we have a very talented songwriter, performer. Harry Chapin is with us. Johnny Brown from the Laughing Show is here. And a lovely girl, Claudia Jennings. And who am I leaving out?
Claudia's enough. No, the Mighty Carson Art Players.
And the Mighty Carson Art Players. Ha-ha. So we'll be with you in 1 minute after a word from one of our sponsors.
Thank you, Doctor. You know, with the world watching the Boris Spassky, Bobby Fischer chess match in Reykjavik Island, interest in the game of chess is at an all-time high. Now, because of this, we've invited a renowned chess grandmaster to give us some insight into that game. Would you welcome from Russia, please, Professor Yuri Garbich.
Welcome, Yuri Garbich.
No, that's not Garbich, that's Grubich. Grubich, you make it sound like that's garbage. I am not garbage. You are garbage. I am Grubich.
Right,
you are a Grubich.
All right, fine.
Grubich.
Sit right down here, Professor.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now tell us something about what is going on. What is going on in Iceland?
Yeah, what is going on in Iceland? I don't understand.
No, you know, are the two champions trying to wear each other out psychologically?
Yeah, that is true, but Fischer, you see, has the advantage.
How do you figure that?
Well, Fischer has been studying Spassky's use of the bishop, as well as the mathematical probabilities of a rook facing down a queen.
Oh, I see.
As well as the psychological effects of leading with a double pawn. Plus, he has one big emotional advantage.
And what is that?
He's wearing his lucky underwear.
His underwear is lucky?
Not for Spassky. That's why Fischer wanted the closed room.
Well, how is your Spassky?
I beg your pardon?
I said, how is your Spassky?
How's your sister? What
no,
do you
no,
mean?
No, no, no. I mean, how is your Spassky reacting?
Well, he's in a closed room with a nut who's wearing old underwear. He reacts normally. He faints a great deal.
We've heard about Fisher's game. Mm. What is his...
You did? What did you hear about it?
Should have been here last night and seen the guy with the goldfish.
I know.
What is his defense?
Well, the best defense is a good offense.
And Fisher's offense?
Is that rotten underwear. That's a big, oh, boy, that closed room.
The psychological attack...
What?
The psychological attack is important to you.
Mm.
What is the best psychological ploy you've ever seen?
The best psychological ploy, let me see. The best psychological ploy I ever saw was Macbeth.
That's a play.
In Russian, it's ploy. Macbeth was one of the best ploys I've ever seen. I like that ploy. Also, I like Folies. Have you seen that? That's a good ploy, yeah.
Yeah.
After this, we'll get some girls and ploy around, huh? Good ploy.
Yeah, all right. Mm. Professor, can you tell us more about the actual game of chess?
Of course I can. Yeah. What do you think I'm here for?
That's what it is.
Now, when you switch a rook and a queen,
right.
That, you see, is called castling.
Castling.
Mm-hmm. And when you switch a king for a pawn,
right.
That's called cheating.
What are you doing?
That's cheating. You can't do that.
Wait a minute.
You fascist pig.
Wait a minute.
You imperialist fatso. That's what you are.
Wait a minute, Professor. Get a hold of yourself.
You get a hold of yourself. There are people watching.
I mean, you're yelling at me.
What?
You're yelling at me.
Ah. You see, that is a psychological attack. Oh. You see, I won't do that no more. But you are a fatso.
Now, what else can you tell us about the game?
Well, you can always switch your king for your opponent's king.
Oh, that's very interesting.
You believe that?
Yeah.
You want to play for a couple of kopecks after the show? You don't know that, huh?
No.
I won't even call you fatso.
No, thanks a lot. All right.
But you are a little chubby, you know.
Yes. What about a night? What is a good night worth?
A good night is worth a kiss. A real good night is worth maybe breakfast and cab fare. But it's got to be a big night. Boy, I mean, you would have a spatula and a foam and everything. That, you get that, that's a good
that's
night.
A good night. I guess it would
a
be.
Cab fare, anything. Yeah. An umbrella, an apartment.
What about
a shoehorn you can even get for that.
What about the rook?
What?
What about the rook?
I will explain that.
Yes.
I can switch my bishop and take off your queen.
Oh, you can't do that.
What is that girl doing?
What girl? What did you do?
What?
What'd you just do?
You wanted to know about the rook?
Yeah.
That was it. You just got rooked. That's a rook.
Tell me, Professor.
That's
what?
A rook.
That's a rook.
That's
you just
a
did.
Rook.
Yes, yes. All right. What is the best defense against an attack by a queen?
The best defense against the queen is to say, hey, cut that out. This is a public place, sir. I'm married. Don't follow me. Or I'm spoken for. Any of those things.
Professor...
Will help against an attack.
Professor Garubich.
What?
Garubich. What is the best move you ever made?
K3.
Does that mean that you moved the king three places?
What?
You moved the king three places?
No, K3 is the number of Natasha's apartment. That's the best move I ever made. She got cab fare home and breakfast and dinner Tuesday.
Professor,
plus getting, dancing and lots of other things.
Getting back to the present competition.
Let's get back to that.
Now, I understand. That in between moves, Bobby Fischer turns around and plays with his face.
You do?
Yes, I do that.
You understand that? I think it's nuts.
No, I mean that the newspaper said that he plays with his eyes, his nose, and his ears.
That's not all he plays with.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that? Please tell us. I hasten to tell us.
Yes, I'm going to. He also plays with Spassky's face.
Oh, does that cause trouble?
Yes, Spassky's starting to like that. When he does many things like that, and Spassky says, hey, that's not bad.
But isn't...
He may get cab fare, too.
But isn't Spassky under...
What?
Isn't Spassky under tremendous pressure?
Of course he's under great pressure. If he loses, he will immediately get arrested.
Oh, you mean he goes on a vacation?
No, I mean we will arrest him. That's what I mean.
But how can he think about
Boy.
That? And how can he think about that and still be able to concentrate?
Concentration is very important. If his concentration is not good enough, we send him to a special camp we have. Where you'll learn to concentrate. Because you've got a lot of time,
Professor... we want to thank you very much for coming to our country.
Yeah, I'm not too glad I did.
No, in a great tradition of all the other great intellectuals and artists that we have brought here, we've brought many of your people to our country. What do you say to that?
Bolshoi.
What?
The Bolshoi Ballet is only the one you brought. I came myself.
Checkmate, you lose.
Oh.
You see, I moved into that red square.
Yes.
Ed, you know where I'm going?
Where?
The red square.
Oh, red square.
That's a little joke.
A little joke in Russian, yes.
Ed, you know what this is?
What?
That's a Russian dressing.
Oh,
another
yeah.
joke. So's your body.
Yes.
Well, I gotta go. Hey! Get
what?
The hell off my boat.
What's that?
It's a vulgar boatman.
Thank you very much, Professor.
Don't thank me. Don't thank me. You do have a nice nose. Maybe we get together and play a match sometime.
Nice.
Say hello to the other match crash.
We are back. When do you take your trip down the Colorado River?
Monday morning. I hop on a raft with all my kids and down the river.
That's got to be exciting. Why don't you take some film, Brent?
I'm going to take some film. I'll take some shots. As a matter of fact, they tell me the third day, which would be a week from Wednesday.
Right.
Next Wednesday, for the whole day, you're on rapids. 63 miles. They strap you into the raft. You have to wear a life jacket.
Take a little film.
I will take some photos of my trip.
And if we lose you, send the film back, will you?
Yes, I will.
This should be interesting tonight. Because we planned a little something a little bit different with Jack. Jack's been on our show a number of times before. And he is a legend in his own time. There is no one else like Mr. Jack Benny. He's also my friend, and that makes me extremely proud. Would you welcome Mr. Jack Benny?
Ago, my automobile was stolen. I had a Mercedes-Benz, beautiful car. I left it in back of my office and was stolen. Johnny Carson heard about it. Came all the way to my home, which is a long way from here, and brought me this car, which is in here. Now, it runs if you could sit in it. You know what I mean? And then I found out when I opened it, you have to put it together first. This is the car. Now, after I had put it together once, I figured it wouldn't fit me, and I wanted to send it to Don Knotts. Well, you're right. They don't know Don Knotts. This would fit. Don, this would fit Don Knotts. But you can clean this up later, can't
you? Oh,
yes. Huh? Why, are people dancing here? You want me to clean it up?
No.
Huh?
No.
I'll clean it up if you want me to clean it up. Honest to God, if you want me to clean it up. Huh?
By the way, did you get your automobile back yet?
I didn't get it back, and I hated losing it. And I heard your monologue, some of it, which was very funny tonight.
Thank you.
And I heard the line where you said about Mary and I being married so long, and that we walked alike. And I want you to know that Mary stole it from me. Because I walked like that first.
I didn't know that.
And she took it from me.
You told me the other night.
I stole it from Loretta Young. Say, I want to ask you something.
Sure.
Every time I'm on this show, I'm never looking in the camera. I'm always looking away. Where do you look?
Well, you can look anywhere you want.
Where the red lights are on the camera?
Yeah, that one is out there on now.
Wherever the red lights, is that where I look? I'd like to know where to look.
Now, you've been doing television since, you know, Marconi came up with the tube.
I know, but my shows, wherever the camera is, we look.
That's it.
And that's the way it runs.
You could look anywhere you wanted tonight.
I can.
Yeah.
All right.
You told me the other night that's the first time you've ever lost an automobile since you've owned one, right?
I've been driving a car all my life, and it's the first time I ever had an automobile stolen. And it's an eerie feeling, even if you're insured. Well, that doesn't mean that you're sure of it. You know what I mean? That's the eerie feeling that I get.
Yeah.
But I'll get her. I'll get another car.
Yeah.
I can afford one.
Yes.
And you could have afforded sending me a better one than that one.
That was a last-minute idea. I'm going to do something a little bit different tonight after we come back. We have about a minute or a minute and a half here. Well, what are you doing lately that we can talk about now before we get into what I'm going to show you?
Well, all right, because I'd like to tell you some things that I should tell you. And then you do whatever you want.
All
right. The car was stolen.
Right.
That you know. Then, before that, I was ill. And I had a very bad cold. And I had it so bad that I went to the hospital for a few days.
And I remember.
Then everybody comes to you and says, you see, the reason you're sick? You're working too hard. We've told you that a million times. Now, Johnny, honest to God, I know people who can't get a job and they've got colds. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
I mean, working too hard doesn't give you... When you can't get work, then you get a cold. I just caught a cold, yeah. And I wanted to get over it.
Do I have time to quote the line of Lenny Gersh, who was going to send you some flowers?
This is beautiful.
Lenny Gersh is a very talented playwright who wrote Butterflies Are Free. And when he heard Jack was in the hospital, he called Mary. And Mary's line was very funny to begin with.
Yeah, because it didn't make sense.
Yeah, and he says... He said, may I send Jack some flowers? And Mary says, no, he's just in for a rest and doesn't want to be disturbed. And Lenny said, well, I didn't intend on sending noisy flowers. He said, just a little bouquet. That was a funny line from Mary.
Yeah,
he just wanted
but
to be
Mary
quiet.
Said he wants to be quiet.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sending any noisy flowers.
We'll take a
Lenny
break.
Lenny Gersh, Lenny Gersh is the fellow that wrote Butterflies Are Free,
right.
So you'll know who it is.
Right. We'll do this and we'll come back, and I've got a few things to show you and ask you about tonight.
Yeah, but I want to tell you.
The Orioles meet the Red Sox, Saturday at 11 on NBC.
KING, Channel 5, Seattle.
Anyway. Oh, excuse me.
I didn't know we were coming back so soon. My guest is Jack Benny, and we were talking about what you're doing, besides now that you're out of the hospital and well again.
Well, I'll tell you what I did, and then I'll tell you what I'm going to do, and then I leave the rest of the show to you.
All right.
When I got over my cold, I had to go to Des Moines, Iowa, because, as you know, maybe they don't all know, I'm associated with the American Republic Insurance Company. I'm a spokesman for them. Now, I'm going to tell you the cutest thing. They have a beautiful building in Des Moines, Iowa. Now, I can only go there like 2-3 times a year. But the fellow who runs the whole business, his name is Watson Powell, has a great sense of humor. He fixed the most beautiful office for me you've ever seen with a girl secretary. I can only go there 3 times a year. A secretary, an office with all pictures of my friends. There's Ed Sullivan, there's Bob Hope, Sinatra, you and I at a banquet. Right. Freddie, your picture's there with Janet, all of our pictures there. Then I asked where George Burns' picture was, because, you know, he knew how close we are. Now, my office also has a bathroom. So he brought me into the bathroom, and there is George Burns with that cigar. You know, that picture with flicking his ashes. And he put it over the toilet. Which means that if I have to go, And I'm standing there. He's flicking ashes over me. Imagine thinking of that, and the lovely part of it is, of course, it's a wonderful organization. I love being with him. He's a great guy. But to fix this office with pictures of everybody, you and I at the banquet,
right?
You know,
remember.
And then to think of putting George Burns's picture in a toilet where it belongs, you know, and flicking ashes on me. Now let's see where else. Then I gave a concert with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. It's after I had the cold.
Right.
Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. I gave a concert for the Temple University outdoors, and it was terribly hot. God, it was hot. It was just awful. And I played violin all for an hour. I must have sounded awful. Now, I didn't want to laugh there, but if you want to give it, it's all right with me. Then, now I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Well, this, I'm here already.
All right.
This I'm doing. Then I'm going on the very first show of the season for Flip Wilson.
You mentioned
Flip Wilson show. They sent me the script, and believe me, if I didn't watch the Flip Wilson show, I wouldn't know what the hell the script was all about. I wouldn't have the slightest idea, but watching the show,
right.
I know it makes sense. While I was reading, the rest of the people were laughing, so I thought it was funny. I didn't know. Then, from there, I'm going to play a week in Colorado Springs, because that's a vacation, at the Broadmoor Theater, which is a block from the Broadmoor Hotel. And it's a beautiful place, and I really go there because I do one show a night. You should play there sometime. And then I spend the whole week playing golf.
You don't ski when you're out there, do you?
Ski now?
Yeah.
No, no. I ski every winter. But I'll tell you where I am going. From there, I'm going to Iceland and play checkers. I go every other summer to Iceland, not Reykjavik. There's a town called Grunch, something like that, Iceland. And I play with a fella. We play checkers every summer. And the reason you don't see it is because I don't allow television or all people in the audience.
But you do that every year.
I do. We play 24 games every year. And you will never see it because I can't play when there's television on. I can't.
I tell you what we decided to do tonight.
Is there anything else you want to know?
No, we're
I'm through with my part.
All right. Now, we're going to do this first, but rather than just, you know, when you usually come on, we sit and we chat, and sometimes we say we try to find areas to talk about.
Yeah.
So this time, I called Mary.
Yeah.
And I think you were probably at Hillcrest or something. And I thought it would be a good idea to get some pictures. I said, go through the files, pick out some pictures from the time you were very, as young as you. She could find them. When you were a baby, right up through your career. And she sent over a bunch of pictures tonight. And I thought we would show the pictures and you can make whatever comments you want or whatever it'll recall. It's kind of a little, this is your life, Jack Benny.
Can I see them, too?
I'll show them to you first, and then I have to stop here to do this.
All right.
And then I'll hold them up here, and then you can see them on the monitor, and we'll...
Wait.
Good. And we'll be right
back. Don't you like working here?
Love it.
It's great. This is really...
If you just joined us, we are going to have a small pictorial history of Mr. Jack Benny. Mary sent these pictures over. I have seen them. You can probably recall most of them. You have to watch the monitor here in the studio, and then I'll show them as they come up. And, Jack, if you want to see what they look like on the television screen, there's the first one. Now, that is you.
I was pretty young then.
It said on the back, about 4 months. According to Matthew Brady, it was around...
I look a little like Otto Preminger. But you want to know something? Can you hold that picture for a second?
Just 1 second.
Because I can tell you something. They tell me, my father and mother told me, that I was always laughing, like in that picture. And then my father made up a wonderful joke. And he didn't have a good sense of humor. My father didn't, neither did my mother. But once in a while, I have a sister who lives in Chicago who has a good sense of humor. The owner, who's a younger sister, you know. Of course, now she's older than I am. But anyway, my father said that when the rabbi picked me up by the ankle, or the doctor,
right.
I mean the doctor, not the rabbi.
Aren't you a little late
with
in life?
With the rabbi, it was something else. Anyway, my father made up a joke, which was marvelous. He said that when the doctor picked me up by the ankles when I was born and slapped my tushy. See, tushy doesn't sound so bad.
Tushy does. Nice.
Sound better than the other word.
Right.
That instead of crying, I laughed. And everybody else laughed. My father says, that's when I decided to become a comedian.
That's funny. They used to dress boys and girls in all the long dresses when they... Look at your fists. Like you've got your bris money in there or something. Hey, notice that? Clenched. Okay, let's...
That could be Yul Brynner, too, there.
All right. Here's the next one. I would guess you are about... Eight or nine years old.
So where's that? Oh, yeah. Now, I remember that. I remember taking the picture. I was angry. You know, my father was cheaper than I am. My father was very tight, and he had a haberdashery. He had a clothing store. I think my father sold me that suit.
That's very, very elegant.
And I was... Hold it a minute. It's as long as I can talk about it. And I was mad. I remember being angry because I wanted, at that time, long pants.
Right.
You see, instead... Because I was going with a girl.
At this age?
And to me, it was embarrassing, you know, fooling with a girl and having short pants. I think that was silly. Taking off the pants, putting them on.
This is almost your first professional...
What is that?
...professional picture
here.
Oh, yes.
This I'm very proud of.
Now, there you are.
Can you see that?
At age...
This
17
is
or 18?
When I was actually a fine violinist. This, I wish I could play now the way I played then. I look like an Italian violinist. There,
yes, you do.
I really played a hell of a fiddle then.
Look at those smoldering eyes.
Yeah.
God, I was good looking. And
how old were you when you first played the violin?
How old I was then, but I was studying at the Chicago Musical College.
How old were you when
I had a chance to really be a great violinist, and I dropped it to be a comedian.
Well, we're glad you made that decision.
Yeah.
Now, all pictures in the service look alike. I don't know why. I could interchange this one with mine when I was in the Navy. They all look exactly the same.
This is after. Now, remember, this is the First World War, ladies and gentlemen.
Easy.
I was in show business before that. And then I quit to join the Navy. And then when I got in the Navy, they knew I was a coward. You see? So they put me into what they call the Navy Relief Society.
I did shows
for the Navy because they knew I was afraid to go to war.
Says on the back you were...
This is before I was an internationally known coward.
I didn't know. Says you were Seaman Second Class on the back of that.
Seaman Second Class, that's right.
All right.
That wasn't very interesting. I was in the Navy.
Yes, sir. Here's a picture of you and Fred Allen.
Me and Fred Allen.
Was that before you started the radio feud for those days?
No, this was during the radio feud.
Right.
Now, most of you adults remember Fred Allen, don't you?
Of course.
You remember Fred Allen? And this is when we started the feud. Now, can you hold the picture a little bit?
Right.
Now, Fred Allen, he started the feud because he had a little boy, 10 years old, playing the violin. And when the boy played, he played it beautifully. He played the B. And then Fred made derogatory remarks about my violin playing. Fred said in his, you know, that the way he talked, he said, "When Jack Benny plays the violin, it sounds like the strings are back in the cat." Now, let me tell you how the... Would you like to hear how the feud started?
Sure.
The next week... The next week, I proved that I could play the violin. I could play the B. The following week, he brought people from Waukegan, my hometown, to prove that I couldn't play it. The next week, I brought people from Waukegan to prove that I could play it. And you know the most awful thing that Fred ever said about me? He said terrible things about me. You know, in Waukegan at one time, now they have a school named after me. But at one time, they didn't, and they wanted to pay me a tribute. Now, this is a great, marvelous gag that Fred Allen pulled. He was a wonderful wit. So they planted a tree, a little tree for me, in the public square in Waukegan, Illinois, and the tree died. And Fred Allen was the only one who could figure out why. So on his show, Fred Allen said, "How can a tree live in Waukegan with the sap in Hollywood?" The whole great big feud that went on years until this great, great humorist passed away. A fellow that I loved dearly, and so did you.
He was a lovely man.
And so did everybody. What do you got next?
Here's a picture.
Mary
of
gave
the
you.
The old radio show here with Eddie Anderson, Rochester.
Rochester.
The old radio days. There you're exhibiting your wonderful self-control again. You're a good audience for people when you break up, when they're on
your
show.
Yeah, he made me break up all the time. He was very, very funny. And there was only one time, though, that he ever thought... See, everything had to be written for Rochester.
Right.
But once he came in with a very funny joke. And he told me that I could use it on the stage if I wanted to. Because he came in and he was constantly raving about a beautiful girl that he was going with. And he said, "Mr. Benny, if you'd liked..." I kept begging him to call me Jack because everybody else did. Now he would. But at that time, I couldn't get him to do it. And anyway, he says, "Mr. Benny," in that husky voice, which I cannot imitate, "I've got a good joke for you." He says, "You know, I kept telling you about a beautiful girl that I go with." I said, "Yes." And you say to me, "How beautiful is she?" And I'll explain it to you. So we did it on the show. I said, "All right, Rochester, you've been telling me about this beautiful girl. How beautiful is she?" And he says, "Mr. Benny, let me explain it this way. Did you ever see a Hershey bar with the almonds in the right places?"
That's a great joke.
Now, isn't that a great
That's a good joke?
Joke? And he thought of that. That was the one joke that Rochester contributed,
That's
but it was worth
joke.
It.
All right, we have...
That joke was worth $500. $500?
We have 1 minute here before we take our next break, but I want to show the picture. This is a... picture of the old publicity picture of you and your Maxwell.
Yes.
A lot of people probably don't realize there was such a car called at one time the Maxwell.
Right. Now, let me tell you, I never owned a Maxwell in my life, and this was an opening of a premiere of a big picture that I made called Man About Town, Waukegan, Illinois. They brought me the Maxwell, and this was the first Maxwell I've ever owned.
Right.
But I never owned one myself. We just did gags about the Maxwell.
It was a great prop. One of the highlights in the radio days was when they cranked up the Maxwell and Mel Blanc.
Mel Blanc
went
did all
through
the noise
entire...
of the Maxwell.
We will take a break here. Here's Ed along with the dog expert to tell you how to please your dog.
Higgins.
Here we are. Now, here's a picture. This is two different pictures side by side, not taken, obviously, at the same time. One with Harry Truman and one with... Was President Nixon then
no.
Vice President? Or
no. The picture where Harry Truman was accompanying me on the piano, he was president.
Right.
At that time, Nixon was vice president.
No.
And
no,
they both accompanied
right.
me. They were both lousy. As I was, too, sure. You know. And we just had fun playing.
You're
the
great.
Reason I use them both, because I'm neither a Democrat nor a Republican, you know. I'm a Whig.
You told a line the other night about after you introduced President Kennedy.
You
remember what you were talking about?
Yeah.
You introduced him, I think it was Madison Square Garden at his birthday party or something.
Yeah. Well, that's a kind of a long thing to tell. But this happened, this picture that you're seeing, sometimes things are sad, but sometimes people like to be remembered for their humor. And I knew President Kennedy very well. And he came here to a dinner given in his honor. But in order to do it, he had to take the room away from the prom. The school had a prom.
It was a high school prom.
High school prom. So he came first to our tables, and he walked to everybody's table and shook hands. Then he came over to me, didn't shake hands, didn't say hello, Jack. I know him as well as I knew him as well as I know you. Walked right over to me and say, Jack, I have to go to that other room and say a few words. Will you join me? I said, Mr. President, I'll be glad to if you'll say hello to me first. So he said, hello, Jack. And I said, now I'll go. So I went with him to the other room. This is the picture. He spoke first. And then he introduced me as his brother, Ted. And then I spoke. Now, let me tell you the sad thing. Shortly afterwards, there was this tragedy. And then this little boy here came to me a couple of days later, although I've had many pictures with President Kennedy, says, Mr. Benny, I think you like this picture. And that's how I happen to have it.
That's a nice picture.
The other story that you want me to tell will take a very long time.
Well, now, this was Tuesday, October 2nd, 1956, Carnegie Hall, debut. Jack Benny, violin soloist at Carnegie Hall.
This is the first concert that I ever gave in my life, and to show you, ladies and gentlemen, the guts that I've got. I only practiced 8 months, and I stopped practice for 40 years, and the first thing you know, I'm in Carnegie Hall giving a concert. And even though I must say I sounded lousy, the critics were wonderful. They said, Benny is no Isaac Stern, he's no Heifetz, but it's a wonderful evening in a concert hall. And that's where one of the critics said, last night Jack Benny played Mendelssohn, and Mendelssohn lost. That one I will always remember.
You must be very proud of this picture.
This, oh, wait a minute. This picture I am so proud of. Will you see this?
This is a picture.
I'm glad you and Mary did.
This is a picture of Pablo Casals, probably the greatest cellist in the entire world.
And how old? Now 90, almost.
Autograph,
oh, 98.
Signed. And on the bottom,
I'm at Pablo Casals' home. Show it to him again.
He says, let's begin together, or shall we meet at the, what is it?
He says, let's begin together, or shall we meet at the coda or something, something like this.
Oh, the final chord.
At the final, yes, the final chord. Now, this is the famous old Pablo Casals. I was in his home, and he loved playing with me. Now, his orchestra conductor was standing near there, and the orchestra conductor thought I had a beautiful bow arm. And he said to Mr. Casals, he says, Pablo, don't you think Jack has a beautiful blow arm? And he says, yes, but it's too flexible, and the tones come out lousy. And he was right. It's like you can't hold a golf ball. Too flexible.
I see you.
Because I remember once Ben Hogan asked Mary if Jack still holds his golf club like Lady Windermere's fan.
He meant it. We have to pause again, and we will be back. Stay with us.
We got more.
NBC's complete Republican convention coverage begins Monday, August 21st.
Daddy's home!
We're back. We've got a few more pictures here, Jack. You already mentioned George. I didn't know George played a musical instrument. Maybe he doesn't.
What's that?
Is this Michelle?
Oh, that's George Burns and I doing the Smothers Brothers. We were on the show.
That's funny.
That is a funny picture, isn't it? Nothing much I can say about that. I already talked about George Burns being in the toilet. I mean, there's no use.
Well, you ought to be able to say something about this one.
That's To Be or Not to Be, the picture I made with Carol Lombard, and that's where I'm playing Hamlet. And that was one of the great movies ever made, not because I was in it, because Lubitsch directed it.
Ernest Lubitsch.
And this picture is being played today. Now, this picture was made, I would say, 30 years ago. This is played today in every country in the world. It's at every art festival and everything. And that's where I'm with her, and I'm Hamlet. I look like a fairy there a little bit.
Yes, a tooth fairy.
Huh? But I wasn't. But didn't I look good? Let me look at it a minute.
Yeah.
Huh? Jeez, I was beautiful. I was good in that picture. I really was. And I don't always worry. What's that?
Well, this has got to be from Charlie's aunt.
How about that?
Yeah.
That's me when I did Charlie's aunt years ago. And I'd like to tell you one story about... Can you hold that picture there?
Sure.
Now, I'll tell you one story about Charlie's aunt. Two stories. Can I tell two stories about Charlie's aunt?
Two.
Give me time.
Two,
because we're near the finish. Can I, Freddie? Because you know. The first story is, when I was dressed like that, you remember Edmund Gwenn, the great actor? He was the old man who was supposed to fall in love with me because he thought I was a woman. So he chased me all over the campus, and I was running like an old lady, and he was chasing me. Then we were supposed to meet around a tree and bump into each other and both of us fall. Now, you know, in the movies, they won't let the stars do it. They have stuntmen. So they had a stuntman dressed like me and a stuntman like Edmund Gwenn. And they ran around with the most, you know, stuntmen can really do it, and bumped each other and fell on the ground. Now they stopped the camera. Now, this is true, Johnny. All they asked me to do... Now, listen to this. I want to show you what a jerk I am. All they asked me to do, once the stuntman fell, was to lie down like this. Now, I got to show you, otherwise it doesn't work. All they asked me to do...
Oh, my God.
Was just roll over so it looked like I was the one that fell. I rolled over. I started to get... All I did was roll. Sprained my back. We couldn't work for 3 days. Help me, God. Help me, God. This I couldn't work. I couldn't work. All I did was roll over. After the stuntmen bumped, then another thing, one more thing that happened. You know, when I was doing Charlie's Aunt, I was underdressed. And I had to have a lady dresser. And she dressed me every show and undressed me. Now, in the middle of the show, sometimes you have to go to the bathroom. So I would have to call for the dresser. Now, I'm the star. Remember, I'm the star of the picture. Now I had to go. It's the middle of the afternoon. And I get out and I go to the door and I yell, "Could I have my dresser, please? Because she has to undress me so I can go to the bathroom." And I sat and I waited again. I waited a while. Nobody came. And I got up. I said, "Could I have my dresser, please? Supposed to be the lady. Supposed to come over and undress me, you know." Again, I sat down. I did this about five times. Finally, I sent my boy that was working for me. Couldn't find the dresser. Now I've got to go. And I was so mad, I ripped every bit of clothes off of me. Everything that you saw that I had on in Charlie's Aunt, went outside almost nude, went to my other dressing room in the bathroom, came back, and they couldn't shoot the rest of the day because we had no clothes. Wasn't too funny, but it's an incident.
Here's the best picture I've ever
seen. It wasn't funny at the time, I can tell you that right now.
Here's the best picture I've ever seen of you and Mary. This is a recent picture, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a lovely picture.
That's my wife.
And Mary photographs like $1 million.
Yeah. She really does. I want to tell you something. We are going to celebrate our 46th wedding anniversary.
What?
And now, I mean this sincerely. I don't always have a chance to talk about my wife. Now, you know how I love Mary. You love Mary, yes. Now, let me tell you something. We've been married almost 26 years. I cannot imagine being married to anybody else in the world. I just can't imagine ever being married to anybody else but Mary Livingston. Now, to say that we don't fight would be silly. We have fights. We've never had fights big enough, you know, to say, I want a divorce, you know. Murder, yes. But never fight. And she lets me go alone on the road. She lets me travel alone. She trusts me.
I'm going to try to talk to Mary.
She trusts me, and I go out. I have fun. I don't do things, you know. I don't do awful things, you know. I have fun. As long as she trusts me, I have fun. I don't have to do awful things. I just have fun. As long as she trusts me, I'll do what I feel like doing. What?
Okay.
Oh, this is something.
The Marquee Chimps. One of the funny shows you ever did, Aunt, was with the Marquee
Chimps. With the Marquee Chimps.
Yeah.
You want to know something about that?
All right.
Can you just hold that a minute?
Yeah.
At the finish of the show, I want to show you about animals, ladies and gentlemen, because I've worked with penguins, with elephants, with everything. But let me show you that if you leave monkeys or animals alone, they eventually do the right thing. Now, they were on that show. A lot of you saw the show, I think, with the three monks. And this was done live. Now, we rehearsed and rehearsed, and I'm playing the violin. One of the monkeys is supposed to leave as I'm playing the violin. Then the second monkey is supposed to leave. And then the third one. Now we do the live show, Johnny, and I'm playing the violin. The first monkey leaves, the second monkey leaves, and the third one doesn't leave. And this is what he did. I want to show you how much better this was than the way he just looked at me and looked at me plain and looked at me and finally did this. Why, I don't know. He went and walked right off the stage. Now, you couldn't rehearse that. You couldn't rehearse that in a million years. You couldn't rehearse that in a million years.
Now, we have one more picture. I know you're very proud of this. This is when you and Bob were down in Florida. Is that right?
Yeah.
You and Bob Hope. This is recent. This was
a few months ago.
You both received honorary degrees.
Yeah. Can you hold that a while?
Yeah.
No, because I love this. I'll tell you why. I was supposed to get an honorary degree from the Jacksonville University, and Bob was supposed to get one. And they called Bob and asked him if he'd like to get it with me together, and he said, ask Jack. I think it would be wonderful. They asked Jack, me, and I thought, I love Bob Hope. Really, I think he's the dearest guy in the whole world. So anyway, we decided we would get this degree together, and it's much funnier. Either way you get it, it's a wonderful tribute. But we got the degree, Doctorates of Fine Arts. Imagine two of us never even finished high school, Doctorates of Fine Arts. We can both spell cat, that's all. Anyway, we get dressed like this. Now, the first part is pretty serious, you know. And we march up with a cap and gown. And Hope looked at me. He was in great form that night. And he says, you know what, Jack? We make Kay Kaiser look like nothing. Now, I got to tell you, the only argument I ever had with Bob Hope, whom I love, only one argument. About 2 months ahead of this, when we knew we were going to do this, Bob Hope called me, and he said, Jack, I got something to tell you, and I insist on this. When you and I go to Florida to get this degree, I insist that your name be first. I want it to be Jack Benny and Bob Hope, because you've been in show business longer, you're older than I am, I think you merit it. He says, I won't have it any other way. I insist your name be first, Jack Benny and Bob Hope. That's the only way I'll do it. So I said to him, well, Bob, I don't know, with everything you've done, I think your name ought to be first. So he said, all right, and that was the end of it. That's the biggest fight we've ever had.
That's a funny story. That's a funny story.
You know, I have to leave you pretty soon.
You know, I hope you've enjoyed this tonight as well.
Yeah, but let me tell you, you said something to me.
Right.
And I think he deserves it. You told me that when Bob Hope made his entrance here a few nights ago, he was the first one to ever get a standing ovation.
That I can remember in a television studio.
On a television show. Now, let me say something. If anybody, in my opinion, deserves a standing ovation, Bob Hope does. If he's on the stage or on the screen or just walking down the street, for the things he has accomplished, he deserves a standing ovation. But I'd like to get one as I'm leaving. I think the fact that I'm willing to get the hell off, I deserve a
beautiful.
That was fun.
That was good.
Yeah. Yes, they're sitting.
Now, wait.
The last time I got a standing ovation like that, I gave a concert in New Orleans. I played the Mendelssohn Concerto. The whole audience stood up and walked out, and that was the end of it. We'll be right back after this message from Gottfried. Thank you, Jack.